the new year, and I don't feel any different. The clanking of crystal, Columbia House Party off in the distance. Jake, this should have been like a New Year's Day episode. Today's going to be a fun one. We have a fun guest. This is an album that I would imagine, given our listenership and the feedback, is going to mean a lot to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And hope we do it some justice.
I think this one's fun because I know I've said on the show before a few times, the idea of like when I was in high school and thinking that no one listened to the same music I was listening to.
Well, buddy.
And then learning that's not the case. This album specifically, getting older and being like, oh, this is like such a popular album, was when I was like, oh, okay, I was just a weirdo. Everyone else got it.
We've covered that you were a weirdo. We're going to cover that in detail today, I think. There is a nice little Jake Goldsby parallel to draw from this album. Also, if you guys could rate and subscribe and all that stuff, which I forget to put in the intro every single time.
What have you been doing if you're not rating and subscribing? Please do it.
Probably just listening like a normal person and not going and like, oh no, I've
never rated anything in my life.
I would love to know like at what point in an episode someone jumps over and rates it. It's like 7 minutes in, be like, oh yeah, this is a four star.
It's when we make a particularly funny comment.
Like, or like with the ranking in the ranking segment when you put an album first that nobody wants first.
Well, that's gonna happen today, my friend.
Oh God.
We'll get into it.
Yeah, we will, unfortunately. For whatever you feel about the OC in general, whether you know you enjoyed it ironically, enjoyed it earnestly, did what I did and found it late as an adult and were surprised by how much you liked the first two seasons as an adult, or if you didn't like it at all, something pretty undeniable about the OC is how effectively they use music as a tool. It's kind of, you know, they weren't the first to do it. It came a little after Garden State, you know, if you want to do the whole up your own ass, music is a character in the show kind of thing. The city is a character.
If you think about
that trope.
If you think about it, Orange County is really the fifth character.
Yes, exactly. The Sex and the City thing from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
Is that what you're going for?
Yeah, here? That's exactly what I was doing. Yeah,
okay. So the OC's use of music is maybe not worth four episodes on its own, but a bunch of bands played the bait shop, and those bands happened to be a part of the early to mid 2000s kind of indie rock boom. They also happened to have some awesome albums. So over the next 4 weeks, we're going to talk about bands that played the bait shop on the OC. We're going to talk about how the OC used music, not only to build scenes and kind of build drama and tension, but also to build out characters. Today will be one of the character heavy episodes. Jake's so worried where I'm going
to
go with this.
No, I'm just excited to talk about how I think that season four is one of the best seasons of the show. Oh. And everyone disagrees with me, but
not everyone disagrees with you. I don't think.
I love it. I love it. Now I'm thrilled.
Yeah, maybe we'll add that to the ranking segment.
Yeah, let's do it.
The bait shop, by the way, is part of season two. It's in other seasons, but season two is the
I think they give it a name.
The key season that we're going to be orbiting around here to start the month off. We're discussing an album that came to be tightly associated with one of the show's main characters, thereby solidifying a broader connection between this band and a certain type of teenager who may or may not be my co-host. You might call them the sensitive type, or if they're still into that music into their 30s, sad boys. Today, we're talking about the 2003 Death Cab for Cutie album and Seth Cohen favorite, Transatlanticism.
The glove compartment is an accurate. Everybody knows it, so I'm proposing a swift, orderly change. But there's no blame for how our love did slowly fade. And now that it's gone, it's like it wasn't there at all. And here I rest, where disappointment.
Say your sweater doesn't smell good.
Yeah, our washing machine is broken, so I've been like cycling through. I tried hand washing the other day, and I don't think I used enough detergent, and it's just like it's not a good scene.
Poor Cassie. Oh man,
her clothes can't be washed either. She just has more of them, so she can cycle through better. And also, it doesn't smell like
yeah. Also, isn't yeah. All right. Because you're in rough shape and you're just a piece of work. That song, by the way, was Title and Registration off of Transatlanticism, a favorite track of a guest we're bringing in because you are in disarray today.
I'm fine. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right. To help us put Death Cab and Seth Cohen in the proper context, we needed not only a fellow 519 person and a fellow Taurus. We needed someone who was introduced to Death Cab because of Seth Cohen. I feel like that connection is perfect. Our good friend and excellent comedian, Lauren Mitchell. Lauren, welcome.
Yo, what's up? I'm so stoked to be here. I'm also feeling rough, but like my clothes smell good. So do you know what I mean? We're doing great. I'm doing better than Jake. It's like Blake's doing the best and then me and then Jake.
Well, we can't start measuring ourselves against Blake.
No, we're ranking.
Okay, ranking.
We're doing co-hosts. Ranks.
the reason I'm in the better shape, though, is lame. I worked.
Right.
That's, what are you going to do? That's always the reason. If I'm ever not hungover, it's because I worked.
Yeah, but you're also just like better prepared than everyone. So
Not today. Today, I'm just going to share memories and get sad.
Excellent.
Aww. Not even sad, actually. Weirdly,
we've
a lot
come
of
through it.
Yeah, a lot of positive memories with Death Cab too, even though they are traditionally, I think, thought of as a sad band.
Yeah, but like I think because they're so popular now that they have that thing where like you can't. I don't listen to like Kitsungi and be like, boy, I remember being sad and when this album I don't listen to came out. Like it's so many of Death Cab's memories and sadness memories are so planted in like 17, you know what I mean?
Yeah. By the way, that album came out in 2015 and I put it on my 2015 year-end list, which was the first year I ever like published my year-end list.
I remember that.
The number of responses I got that were like, Death Cab still makes music? Like, oh yeah, to this day. And it's not bad.
There's like two or three really good songs on that album.
Yeah, and the album that came after that in 2018 is pretty good too.
Yeah, I like that one.
You can follow Lauren, by the way, on Twitter.
I guess you can follow me.
Internet Lauren. She's the host of an excellent podcast called Cavern of Secrets. How was the live show when you did that, by the way, like the general experience of doing a live podcast?
It was so fucking cool. It was just like really, I don't know, I've done like a lot of live shows. I've done like fairly big like live comedy shows, like I performed like Second City and like the Big Space and Comedy Bar, but it was just so fucking cool. Like all these people, like some people came out not because they like listened to the podcast, but because they knew like Bim and Nicole from Thirst Aid Kit, or they knew like Mary, who is the Mary H.K. Choi, who was like another writer I had on. And they were like, oh my God, this was so great and so fun. Like, I'm going to listen to your podcast now. But it was just this like, it was so fucking beautiful, like really beautiful energy. We just had such a fun, lovely time.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Also a fun, lovely time. This will be, I hope. What an awkward transition.
Yeah, but you know
suck,
what?
Blake.
We all.
Wow. Now I'm back down on your level, Jake. Here we go.
All right. Oh, am I at the top now? Yeah. Now it's Lauren, Blake, Jake.
I think we can all agree that I'm at the bottom.
Yeah. You are always going to be number three, and how well are those doing in this?
It's just
episode.
Like the degree of number three. And then you'll leave, and then I'll be number two.
Nice.
Jake has not loved the amount of times 519 things have come up on this podcast
before. No, I don't have a problem with it.
I just bring it up randomly. You are also a 519er.
Hell yeah,
Plattsville,
bro.
By way of New Hamburg.
Yep.
New Hamburg.
And I lived in Kitchener-Waterloo.
A real place.
Blows my mind that I lived in Toronto for most of my entire life and there's just towns near it that I've never heard of in my life.
Well, this is like, New Hamburg's like maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours from Toronto. Yeah. It's outside of Kitchener-Waterloo. So I went to Waterloo and then I lived there for a couple of years and then I moved here. Yeah.
Lauren and I once were both coming back from that area and we didn't end up on the same Greyhound, but we were supposed to be on the same Greyhound and it was like 3 hours, running like 3 hours late. And I bailed and just like stayed in Guelph an extra night. But yeah, found out later. Could have been, I mean, we had already met, but what a meet cute it would have been.
Yeah. Aww.
I mean, I have listened to a lot of music riding Greyhounds.
Hell yeah, bro.
It's also,
I think I've only ever been on, I've been on like, obviously like buses before, but I think I've only ever taken one Greyhound.
I've taken so many.
The best Greyhound experience I had, I took one to Ottawa a couple summers ago to see my friend Jeff, who I actually have a strong Death Cab connection with.
Look at this.
He introduced me to them.
Wow.
So shout out to Jeff. Jeff also listens to some episodes of the podcast. I assume he's going to be listening to this one.
If he's not, he's missing.
I mean, if he's not, this is a wasted segment. If he is, he's probably going to be happy to hear his name and then upset to hear me call him out for only listening to some of the episodes.
That's fair.
Unbelievable. Jeff, rate and subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
Just one review. It's just Jeff.
Just Jeff.
Here you go, man. Shut up.
I feel like it would be better if they said my name more. Jeff, 4 out of 5, Jeff.
Jeff. I hope the review just says Jeff.
So, since we're talking about Jeff, I wouldn't normally lead with my own connection to an album, but I have mentioned Jeff before as a, he was like one, probably my main music friend in high school. We did Warped Tours together, the Motion City soundtrack episode I talked about, us going to Warped Tour and the car breaking down a little bit. He was also my go-to drive to a parking lot and smoke weed friend.
Yeah.
Which, if you know, if you're from the Cambridge area, you might know the spots. There used to be a restaurant called Oliver's that was alleged to have been a Hell's Angels bar. There was like one pool table.
Also the antagonist of season one of the OC.
Yeah,
the tie-ins here. there was like one pool table in the middle of the restaurant. It was super weird. It's now a place called Q Barbecue, which I've never been to. Anyway, I can't remember the when or the why we were in that exact spot, but I do remember being in Jeff's 96 Volkswagen Golf and him turning on this song.
I've got a hunger twisting my stomach into knots that my tongue is tied off. My brain's repeating, if he's got an impulse, let it out. But they never make it past my stomach into knots.
I have a very strong memory of when I first got into this album, listening to it in my dad's car, and that song came on, and with like the bop buzz in the chorus, my dad going, do they write lyrics or
what is that's this? Classic dad yeah. reaction.
That song, by the way, is called The Sound of Settling. It's great. It was my first introduction to Death Cab through Jeff. I don't know that I loved it at first. The bop buzz threw me off a little bit, and I feel like while it's a very good song and made sense as a song you would hear as your first intro to transatlanticism, it doesn't give you the best idea of what the rest of the album is like. Lauren, I know you have some deep connections to this album as well. You chose to do this album to come on. Hit us. What's transatlanticism? How did teen Lauren come across transatlanticism?
Well, yeah, it was the OC. Like we got, I don't know. I feel it was grade 12. Pretty sure that we all like that came out the summer before grade 12, and then we were all super into the OC, and that's like I thought Adam Brody was so hot. So
Adam
I was
Brody
like
is hot.
I mean, obviously in my adulthood Adam Brody's still hot. Just a picture of him skateboarding recently, I was like, that's disrespectful to me. But I mean, the real sexy person on the OC is
Peter Gallagher,
the eyebrows Cohen, Sandy Cohen.
I do think it's like a sign of the real sign of growing up is when you realize that the hottest person you'll see is Sandy Cohen.
Yeah. Oh, so hot. Such a good guy.
Right?
You know?
Sandy's just like not, other than like a minute, he's like the least problematic of the characters.
He like never really does anything. You're
he's
like
the
yeah.
show's moral compass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every good show has one of those where it's like, okay, this is the person who, even if they're not the main character, that like morally the show has to center around.
And few shows have one as good as Sandy Cohen.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great.
I mean, he just adopts this beatnik kid
and gives him so much good advice.
Yeah,
no, he's so...
and his dipshit son keeps messing everything up.
I guess that does make sense though. If you're really rich and your son's a dipshit, just go and get another one.
But he's not even the rich one. He's just like, I can use all this money that I didn't make to help people.
Yeah.
Yeah,
get a tougher son.
And then Kirsten's all like, oh, I'm going to go drink about it.
Yeah, I work in real estate.
You have no idea what it's like.
Kiki.
Being this rich.
Oh, yeah, boy. It's a drug, you know.
God, what a great show.
But yeah, it's like they played Death Cab on the show, and then he was like always talking about it. So I was like, what is this hot? Like, this is... the simple-minded teenage Lauren was like, this hot guy likes a thing? Like, maybe I could check that thing out.
I'm going to gift myself the Seth Cohen starter pack.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
You know.
Honestly, Cavalier and Clay Slaps as well.
It's so. Totally.
It's excellent. So I was going to say, I didn't watch The O.C. until an adult. Jake, we've talked about before how you had this, like, teen and young adult blockage of, like, you wouldn't listen to music that you didn't think was cool.
Yeah.
I had complete blinders on for anything pop culture. It was just, like, I don't care about TV. I didn't watch a lot of movies unless they were, like, comedies. I just, like, The O.C. was just completely off my radar. Come to find out later, like, Cavalier and Clay was, like, my favorite book.
Of course.
And Death Cab was one of my favorite bands.
To your point, like, I was like, oh, I don't want to listen to things that aren't cool. I was, like, embarrassed to like The O.C. so much.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you know, like, teen drama, like, girl show. And I was, like, 15. And so I was like, oh, I really like this, but I don't want to talk about how much I like this.
It was funny. Like, my, like, dude friends in high school liked it. Like, we all were like, no, the show's good. Because it came on, do you remember? It came on in the summer.
Yes.
During, like, they were just going to run it as, like, some summer teen soap drama on Fox. But it got super popular.
And they're like, how about we make it 35 episodes?
Yeah, and that's why, like, so much shit happens in the first. Because they were like, we're just going to burn through plot because we don't think we're going to get picked up. And then... That yeah, kind of bit them in the ass.
The first time you hear Death Cab on the show is episode 7 when they go to TJ. And it, like, we were talking a little bit beforehand that, like, that seems like your act 3 drama
totally.
For a season.
Yeah.
Not act 1, yeah. Which it is.
Well, like, Oliver doesn't show up till, like,
fucking
episode
Oliver.
20. But, like, his arc is so... Like, that to me is, like, the
yeah, he's season the big baddie
arc. Yeah.
In the season 1.
He doesn't show up till, like, episode 16 or 17.
I know. And then because I was like, well, when I was thinking about it in my mind, I was like, the Tijuana thing was like season 1 and then season 2 is the Oliver thing. And I was like, this shit happens in the first season. Like, when I was rewatching it, like, 4 or 5 years ago,
Luke
I was
has
like,
an
blown away.
Luke has an entire character. He has like 4 character arcs in season 1.
It's crazy.
He goes from like the bad guy to like the lovable idiot to sleeping with Julie Cooper to leave. Like,
yeah,
he's just it's in one
it's
season.
Truly, and then he's. Is he not gay, maybe?
His dad is.
Yeah, okay, that's what
right.
I'm remembering.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
That's funny, actually, that when Cassie and I rewatched it, she also was like, doesn't Luke turn out to be gay?
Yeah, you're like, no. Close,
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 though.
You don't have to whisper it.
A Jace.
Gay a Jace. Gay Jace. He's
oh,
gay Jason.
Oh, God.
I
believe non-binary is the term, but we can replace it with gay Jason. Yeah.
I don't think, no, if his dad was gay, he was gay. And
yeah.
then
oh,
Luke
yeah, his
was
dad.
Gay
yeah.
Jason.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's just a Natalie Portmanteau for your beautiful
you
Morgan.
Look at
oh,
this.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Wow. I'm going to... Now it's like the ranking of the people on the show is now Lauren 1. And like we're both down in like the teens, despite knowing she's just so far ahead of us
yeah.
after that. Unfortunate.
I
mentioned...
To be this good.
Yeah, it is. Stuff. It does seem exhausting. it is hard. So I mentioned the Seth Cohen starter pack. That included, by the way, a copy of The Goonies, a copy of The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, and albums from Death Cab, Bright Eyes, and The Shins.
Shins seems like it doesn't fit the Seth
yeah.
pack.
It's
I don't care
just,
for The Shins.
I bet Seth loved Garden State, is it?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, true.
The
Hell
Shins
yeah.
will change your life.
Yeah, fair point.
The Shins will change your life. Oh yeah, if anyone watched Garden State a lot in high school, it was Seth Cohen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if the timelines line up exactly where that would be possible, but
it's
like
close
spiritually.
It's close enough.
So I wanted to point out, this is Jake. So I messaged Jake as I was prepping for this episode. And I was like, you know, Jake, some of Seth's like less great tendencies seem a lot like high school and young adult Jake. The biggest one of them, I think, is that so the Seth Cohen starter pack comes about because Seth is in a love triangle with Summer and Anna. And he's trying to pick between them. And he is giving them each Christmas gifts. But the gifts are entirely about himself. It's Jake's talked before. We've talked mixtape construction. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's always been like, well, if you like this, I think you might like this. Mm-hmm. Or like, this kind of fits the situation. Jake's is just like, no, here's a bunch of stuff I like. I hope you like it too.
Yeah.
That is extremely Seth Cohen.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I don't really have a defense for that. It's just accurate. Like, no, but I mean, like, I think a lot of teenage boys that weren't, I think like one of the reasons The O.C. is so good is that they very clearly and purposely wrote, like, the 4 leads are just like the different archetypes of mm-hmm. teenagers.
Yeah.
And very clearly. And so like, if it sounds trite, but like, if you weren't a Seth, you were a Ryan, or if you weren't a Ryan, you were a Marissa. And like, I think there's a lot of...
Oh, imagine being a Marissa.
Oh, God. I know. God.
Her bangs. She had so many bad bang situations. Sorry. That was no, like, her hair is like really bad. I'm like, they spend so much on wigs and haircuts and they should have just got her acting lessons, you know?
Oh boy. So I actually wanted to, we've touched on this a couple times before when movies like 500 Days of Summer or High Fidelity have come up where like the protagonist is flawed, but depending on how you're watching it, you know, especially young people, you might not realize that the flaws are a part of the character. Like, do you think that there are teenage boys watching this show identifying with Seth and just being like, oh yeah, that's like, he's the good guy. I have those same negative 100%. Things. Everyone yeah. should look by it and I should get Summer and Anna. And
I was so thrilled that there was a character on television who listened to emo and was like a comic nerd that people were like, no, but he's cool.
Yeah.
It was the best. I absolutely watched it without even considering how much of an asshole he is.
Yeah, and as a teenager, it never occurred to me that, like, to me, I was like, I thought that was, like, attractive, the, like, oh, here's my, like, cool literature and music and movies.
Cool
and, like,
literature.
I want you to, like, also be part of this, like, cool thing that I like, you know what I mean? I was like, that's hot. Whereas, like, now I'm like, fuck you, I have my own taste in things.
Seth absolutely rides the bus, like, with a copy of Infinite Jest that he has no intention of.
I also wanted to know, Lauren, if you ran into this in high school, being that you are a very cool person, and I'm assuming a cool teen. Seth is like absolutely flabbergasted when he finds out that Marissa has good taste in music, which is like also a really shitty thing that you were just like over the moon. Can't believe that like a girl would like good
music.
Yeah,
but also there's no way that Marissa Cooper listens to the Cramps. I'm sorry. There's no chance.
You don't think a rich privileged person would listen to music that has nothing to do with rich white privilege, but then find some association of her own struggle within it?
Maybe. I mean, like, I bet Marissa listens to like Death Cab for sure. But like the Cramps is, I don't know.
All right. We're going to talk about Death Cab instead of the OC. Well, it's still a little bit of OC, I'm sure. But we're going to talk about the actual album we're supposed to be talking about after this. All right, Jake is now nude.
Very clearly wearing clothes.
Jake ditched the smelly sweater, though.
Yeah.
All right, I promised that we were going to talk about transatlanticism after the break. I got one more thing for you, Jake.
Oh, boy. Oh, this is the surprise?
Well, it's not really a surprise. It's
this is the thing I'm going
to
hate.
Me though. Not being able to. It's not even something to hate. It's just I don't even know if you'll remember it. April 20th, 2018, heading into the 2017-2018 Toronto Raptors playoff
420.
Run. 420. I received a mailbag question at Raptors Republic.
Oh, yes,
of course. Hey, Blake, extremely important question for you. Can you please assign a Death Cab song to each member of the Raptors team and give your justification for these choices?
I do remember this.
We did that. Jake, I got asked that mailbag question, and I sent Jake a Google Doc and was like, I need help with this. Let's. So I have in front of me a Death Cab song for every Raptor on that roster.
You still have it.
With our justification. It's at the internet, man. Those articles don't go anywhere.
Unless you work for the Score.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. There's actually not a ton of transatlanticism songs used on here, which is a little surprising. Going back and looking at it.
I don't know about you, but I was trying to be very clever with it. And I feel like it was like, can't use transatlanticism. It's too obvious. I think, isn't transatlanticism the song one of them, though?
No, we didn't use it.
I thought we used it for like a, I feel like I remember using I Need You So Much Closer for like a trade idea or something. I don't know.
We did not.
Huh, okay, well.
I don't know. We did use the new year for the team in general.
Right.
Let's make believe that we're wealthy for just this once. There'd be no distance that could hold us back. So this is the new year.
We were just a year early.
Exactly. Fine. We should have waited for the coaching change and the DeMar change. The other, what else did we use? Oh, yeah. We did Sound of Settling for Malachi Richardson because I was still steamed that they traded Bruno for him.
Right.
Yeah. Not the best. Anyway, that was, to keep bringing up random podcast origin stories.
Hey, there's many. There's many that eventually formed into the idea that you are listening to right now.
All right. We're going to go through how Death Cab got to the point of transatlanticism a little quicker than we normally would. One, because we spent like 20 minutes talking about the OC. And two, because we talked a lot of Ben Gibbard's backstory when we did the Postal Service episode. Ben Gibbard was pretty famously writing both of those albums at the same time, Give Up from the Postal Service and Transatlanticism, which has to be the best songwriting year anyone's ever had.
Yeah, I feel like to be like, oh, what'd you do this year? Oh, I wrote two of the most classic indie emo albums of all time.
Were you a Postal Service fan, Lauren?
I'm actually like not really a Death Cab fan in as much as I'm a Transatlanticism and Give Up fan.
Okay.
Like, I never listened to any. I've heard like other Death Death Cab songs. I never went back and listened to their old stuff, and I didn't super love the like stuff after Transatlanticism. And I have such a like, I feel very connected, like youth, teenage nostalgia-y with Give Up and Transatlanticism.
Yeah, so. I think that's fair. Sometimes you just want to keep the thing the thing. Yeah.
And especially if, like, considering they came out the same year.
Yeah.
It's very like, it makes sense. Like mm-hmm. that in my brain, Give Up is like, I get having them sort of lumped together mm-hmm. in a way. Like it was, and because I think you all, a lot of people either found, like, if you didn't come to it from the OC, it was like you found Transatlanticism, then it was like, oh, this other Ben yeah. Gibbard album, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Which highlights just how off the rails Ben Gibbard was at this time with so many different projects at once that were basically the same band.
Yeah.
So he was the guitarist in Pinwheel while also doing a solo project called All Time Quarterback, while also doing a side solo project called Death Cab for Cutie. He had two side solo projects at once.
Hey, man, throw a thing at the board, see what sticks.
Yes. As All-Time Quarterback, he released two EPs in 1999 and then an album with both of them together that was released in 2002. And one of those tracks, Underwater, was later recorded as a Death Cab song. Death Cab was his solo side project at first, and then in 1997, he released You Can Play These Songs With Chords as a demo under that name. Then later, that got released in 2002 with new songs. The name Death Cab for Cutie, by the way, is taken from a song by the Bonzo Dog Band that appeared in Magical Mystery Tour, the Beatles movie. Way to go. All right. Super Seth Cohen-y with your references there.
Finally, the Beatles give something to music.
So the success of You Could Play These Songs With Chords as a cassette led him to kind of expand the band. He hired Chris Walla to play guitar. We've talked a lot about Chris Walla over the course of this podcast. Great choice. Nick Harmer was on bass. Nathan Good was on drums. They recorded in the basement of a house that Gibbard shared with a bunch of other roommates. Sound quality's right up there. They had kind of the usual turnover at that time. They fell into the drummer carousel that pretty much every... I don't know why no band can keep a drummer.
The drummer's hard to find.
Yeah, but it is...
Like, every three episodes, we talk about a band that rotated through drummers.
But it's true. Like, to your point, it's a good drummer's hard... Like, we were kind of talking with this a little bit in the Radiohead episode about Phil Selway and how, like, underrated he is at keeping everything in that band together. And I think for bands that have broader sounds, for lack of a better term... That is really hard to find, like genuinely.
And we're going to talk about their drummer now, Jason McGurr, how he kind of was that stabilizing force in this drummer rotation and Chris Wall and Ben Gibbard kind of pulling in different directions. Things got not great for a little bit. They were fine at first. They released Something About Airplanes in 1998 to pretty favorable independent reviews. Then they released We Have the Facts and We're Voting Yes in 2000. That actually had Gibbard playing most of the drums.
Classic.
On it, which is... interesting. That's cool. Hey, we don't have a drummer. Ben Gibbard's going to take it over. And then they released the photo album in 2001, which probably most well known for this song, their first song to ever chart a movie script.
Thank you.
That is the one guitar and a bunch of complaining song, is it not?
That is the song where Summer says, it's like one guitar and a whole lot of complaining. And he says, do not insult Death Cab. That's the good thing to do when you have a crush on a girl. Yell at her in your car.
Yeah.
While you're driving too
so
slow.
Their whole courtship is so charming in 2004.
Also not charming, after the photo album, the band very nearly broke up. The recording environment was, end quote, by far the worst. And the relationship with Walla was incredibly strained, as Gibbard told Vice in 2018. Walla was really burned out. They weren't vibing. So around that time, Gibbard starts writing and recording the Postal Service album, while also writing songs that would eventually be on Transatlanticism. Meanwhile, Chris Walla is producing for the Thermals and the Decemberists, and he goes on to produce for Everyone Good because he rules. Eventually, the tensions kind of cool down. You have the benefit of time. You didn't, like, they had recorded 3 albums in 4 years. That's not a sustainable pace. So then they get Jason McGuire as the new drummer. And as Chris Walla told Alt Press in 2013, he saved our band in a way. His calm energy and perspective kind of mellowed them all out and acted as, it sounds like, sort of a middle ground between Gibbard and Walla and them both having a lot of side projects and stuff. It helps, too, in terms of the quality of the album, that Gibbard, around this time, as anyone who's a fan of Give Up or this album can tell, started to take the songwriting a lot more seriously. Walla explained to Alt Press, in the year before Transatlanticism, Ben really started treating songwriting like it was a career, really investing in it like a day job and an I need to finish a song a day kind of way. There were a lot of songs for the record. He brought in 25 or 30 demos, and his chops were getting better as he was self-editing less, wound up resulting in some of the most genuine and straightforward writing he's ever done. Really open and unguarded in a way that was kind of new, which I think is the entire appeal of Death Cab.
Yeah.
It's open and unguarded and kind of simple.
Yeah. And like, I'm sure we'll get into it as we talk about this album, but like so much, even like the, I guess for lack of a better term, complicated songs on Transatlanticism are built on very simple chord progressions, very simple lyrics, but they're constructed in such an effective way. Like, I'm thinking of the title track specifically.
Yeah. But.
Let's play that title track, Transatlanticism. That song is the song Andrew McMahon of Something Corporate Jacks Mannequin has been trying to make his entire career and just hasn't found it.
This is like the 4th episode where you've taken a veiled shot at Andrew McMahon.
I'm also not even worse than Ben Gibbard for having a bunch of projects that are the same band under different names. It's not that bad. I said on a mailbag that Something Corporate was like, so we got asked on a mailbag, what is the like one song that people who don't know what emo is hear in their head when they say they don't like emo? Mm-hmm. And what did I pick? Constantine?
Yeah, I think so.
Constantine by Something Corporate.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it was that or Simple Plan.
Yeah.
It's still Dashboard.
Yeah, but your answer wasn't even that. It was Blink. It was I Miss You.
That's the aesthetic.
Yeah.
The sound is Dashboard.
Yeah, my answer was, I think, Gerard Way singing yeah. Simple Plan and Something
To me,
Corporate.
Dashboard is one guy and a whole lot of complaining.
Yeah, 100%.
That's like, I never got into, I like, all my friends were into Dashboard when I was in high school, and I was like, this is too much even for me.
Yeah, I felt similar.
I love Dashboard.
Yeah, I get that vibe from you.
Thanks. Thanks.
Oh, he's white and has a beard?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Sad about nothing all the time? Yeah. What are you talking about?
All this privilege and you're so fucking sad.
I don't see it.
Explain that, Blake.
Yeah. It's called... We won't get into it. So transatlanticism... Great example of you said how the simplicity of the music, Jake, and also of his songwriting. I think that's a really well-written song. Gibbard told Vice, I was 25, 26 at that point. I was finally able to just do music. Jimmy Tamborello would send me a song for Postal Service on a Monday. I'd knock it out like it was no big deal, send it back to him on a Tuesday, and then write We Look Like Giants the next day. Everything was just flowing so quickly. Looking back on that time, I would kill to have another year where things are flowing that effortlessy, but it just takes more work now. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it goes, right?
Yeah, you can't have a career year every year. You can't write Give Up and Transatlanticism every year.
I have like a very like PTSD memory that's super embarrassing and on brand about that song, okay. Which isn't long enough, and it's not long enough ago for it to be like cool.
Spill it.
In 2016, in the fall, Death Cab headlined TURF, the Toronto Urban Roots Festival, mm-hmm. which sadly no longer exists, but it was the best festival in Toronto. But they headlined that in 2016. I was going through some real personal stuff that summer and fall, as Blake knows very well.
Podcast origin story.
It was actually 2 days before that show.
Oh, great.
And my friend Jen was also going through some stuff. And we were like, of course, we're going to go see Death Cab. And it was also like Jimmy Eat World played that day and Hold Steady and New Pornography. It was a great day. But they closed with Transatlanticism. And we were just like standing in the middle of Fort York, just like openly weeping. Being like, oh, and like having that thought of like, we are exactly that like pathetic, like stereotype of just like watching Death Cab and like sobbing in public. It was a fun day.
I like that they blew the song out. So that was originally like only 2.5 minutes. It was really tight. And Chris Walla was like, no, we need more. We need more. He said it felt unfinished. It didn't need another part. We just needed more of it. And it kept getting louder and louder. For a pretty simple song, it does kind of build that way.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's interesting. You can hear, I think a lot of songs that are that long, when you hear they start as 2.5 minutes, like, oh, I can't even picture that. I can totally hear what a 2.5 minute version of that song would sound like.
Mm-hmm. And it's still good, but it's not that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not their show closer every night. It's
a little surprising to me as a show closer.
It works.
Yeah. No, I think because of the build, it makes sense.
Yeah.
See, I would think it's the song that closes pre-encore is where I could see it fitting.
Yeah, that's fair.
Lauren, that was one of the tracks that you had mentioned. You have a little bit of a connection with, as well as Passenger Seat, which I find to be like a great small town anthem. So mm-hmm. I was not surprised that it was on your list. The I roll the window down and then begin to breathe in the darkest country road. What is it about those songs for you that's, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think Transatlanticism is the best song on that album. And I think it's like because it's super simplistic. It's like that song is like exactly what like pining feels like. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You're like doing a lot of heavy pining. Yeah, it's like super simple, but it like drags it out in this way that like longing and pining and all that stuff kind of feels, and like those things you feel so fucking intensely when you're a teenager. I mean, you still feel them intensely as an adult, but like when you're a teenager, like your body's just like so chock full of hormones, you're like, just poke me, everything's gonna explode. And I feel like that song is kind of like that, like that just big fucking like waving build up to like,
I can't stand it.
Yeah.
And
even it's like, just like the simplicity of the line, I need you so much closer and nothing
over
else.
And over and over again. Like, hell yeah. That's what being a teenager feels like.
Might not even be the most, this is what being a teenager feels like song on the album though.
That's true.
There's also We Look Like Giants, which is like, I think just like everyone's first love is that song, or maybe not first, but I feel like everyone gets one We Look Like Giants relationship.
Even if you don't get like the relationship, it's absolutely the song of like how you feel about your big unrequited crush and like mm-hmm. what you want.
Yeah.
Like what you have in your mind of like, if we were to ever get together, this is what it would be like. Yeah. And it's like, oh, we shouldn't ever get together because it's a stupid high school crowd.
Yeah.
I say not from experience.
Yeah. Not from experience at all. This, by the way, is We Look Like Giants.
God bless the daylight, the sugary smell of springtime, remembering when you were mine and still suburban time. When every Thursday I'd brave those mountain passes and you'd skip your early classes and we'd learn how.
Anyone who doesn't remember or hasn't heard that song in a long time, that's kind of, you know, about that thrill, what you sacrifice to immerse yourself in those feelings. So whereas Transatlanticism is pining, this is, you know, if not when you get there, just kind of wholly diving in, imagining what that would be like, to your point, Jake. It's pretty intense as far as like what a high school love song sounds like.
Yeah, that's my favorite song on the album,
mm-hmm.
despite the fact I've always been mad there's not a second chorus in it. Which I feel like is on purpose, but it just has that like build, like that really like rocking chorus.
Yeah.
And then it goes back to the verse and then there's no second
chorus. Yeah.
Which like makes it rule, but also is like, just play that again.
I would love to think that that was like intentional with the feelings that We Look Like Giants brings. And it's like, oh yeah, you know, maybe this isn't a real thing. And maybe it's not the best to just like chase this feeling like that. Cause you can't get it back.
I like,
but
that.
It's probably just like a creative choice of, we didn't want to do a second chorus.
It's almost like frustrating,
yeah,
but like not in a bad way. I think that song's interesting too, because like this album to me feels very like, we're talking about the drummer thing, like this album actually doesn't feel very percussive. Like it kind of reminds me, do you know like the Fiona Apple album, The Idler Wheel?
Yeah, it was one of my top albums of this decade.
Absolute banger. But like, you know how that album is like, previously, like her work wasn't like super percussive. She started working with like a guy who was like a drummer, and that album has like so much drums on it. And this album kind of feels like the opposite of that to me. But then this song is like, it comes in and it's like got this like driving drum beat where like none of the other songs really have like a drum beat that like drives the song. And this is like kind of the only one that does, which I think is like sonically interesting in terms of maybe the Sound of Settling is the only other one that has like a driving like drum beat that's like, you when you think of the song you think of the drum beat, not like the melody or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's also one of the reasons why it was one of my favorite songs in high. Like now I just think it rules, but like in high school it was very much like I wanted rock songs, you know what I mean? And like, so, but you're right that, and that's why when I was younger I actually preferred Photo Album to this album, because Photo Album is very much a like indie rock album, and then this has like three, like this Sound Something in New Year are really the only like quote unquote rock songs on the record, that, and that frustrated me when I was younger, and now I think it rules.
I think
it speaks to also We Look Like Giants plays toward the back of the album as the second last song. This album is structured so well, like
so
a
well.
New Year is an unbelievable opener, taking We Look Like Giants into A Lack of Color as kind of the closer, where We Look Like Giants gets you this kind of, the, it builds and you've reached this intense point. I think Tiny Vessels right in the middle is really good too. Like that's where Walla kind of being in his bag and having way more experience as a producer now kind of picks up. But then you get toward the end and you've had like, you know, you've had the normal ebbs and flows throughout with Title and Registration and Sound of Settling bringing you into Tiny Vessel. And then the back half of the album kind of like, not mellows out, but it takes you back down. And then We Look Like Giants is this huge up before A Lack of Color as this incredible closer. I think it's a super well-structured album. And I think, you know, again, not to go back to Chris Walla over and over again, but like he's a really, really good producer, and, and having his hands all over this while Gibbard is just on one as a songwriter. I mean, it all just works. That's why it's a classic album, right?
To your,
the
to
way
your point,
Tiny like, Vessels leads into Transatlanticism.
To your
chef's kiss.
To this point, though, I'm just looking at the track listing now. And like, I think this is one of those albums that like I just know so well. I never listen to it front, like in order anymore. It's just like either on shuffle or part of another, like a Death Cab mix or whatever.
Oh, listening to an album on shuffle, that's so fucking chaotic, dude. Like,
I only do it with albums I know like by heart.
Guy wears a sweater that smells.
I'm having a rough day. But I think it's interesting that Transatlanticism is the seventh song on the record. Mm-hmm. When in my head, when I think about it, it's like right before they We Looked Like Giants.
Yeah.
And like, do you guys also always forget that Death and Interior Decorator is on this album?
Yeah.
Because like, it's like translated some Passenger Seat, Death and Interior Decorator, We Look Like Giants. Yeah. Like, I just forget it's there.
Yeah, me too. It's the one, you're right. That is the one song I always forget. And it's not a bad song.
No, not
at all. It's just like the least good song on an album full of bangers.
Yeah, and that's, and I think, and to your point, Blake, about how well constructed the album is.
It should be on it should be on side A.
Yeah.
Before you get to that, like it should be with Expo 86, I think. And then before you get into that Sound of Settling, Tiny Vessels, Transatlanticism, which all flow so well into each other. And then you get the bill. Although, I mean, I guess that little bit of a lull between Passenger Seat and We Look Like Giants, like maybe it sets up We Look Like Giants a little better.
Maybe.
But I think it's maybe better as a side.
But also
track,
like to your point about Tiny Vessels flowing into Transatlanticism, Transatlanticism flows into Passenger Seat so well that like I just feel like the back side B should just be like
a cohesive one.
Yeah, you know what I mean,
this is Tiny Vessels.
This is the moment that you know that you told her that you loved her, but you don't. You touch her skin, and then you think that she is beautiful, but she don't need a thing. Yeah, she is beautiful, but she don't need a thing to me. So one last touch, and then you'll go, and we'll pretend that it meant something so much more. But it was vile.
You're beautiful, but you don't mean a thing to me.
Just like the anthem of every person like me.
Yeah.
I think I actually like Tiny Vessels is a good song, but I think I like, especially in my adulthood, I'm like, dancing masculinity.
Oh, yeah.
It is on my list of favorite songs on the album. It's certainly not on the list of songs that I would, you know, in a 2020 MSN status be pulling for, you know?
I do think it's like it does suit Death Cab very well that their like most problematic song is just Gibbard kind of being an asshole.
Yeah,
it's not even like it's not like some other albums we've talked about on this show. It's just like, oh, that's pretty mean.
It also kind of suits Gibbard in that like he probably was just like so unaware that like shitty teen boys would take that song and be like, that's what I feel, not Transatlanticism or Passenger Seat, or it's like, no, that's the unrequited anthem that I'm gonna go with is. Don't care. Just you don't mean anything.
Don't matter.
Yeah.
Hide your tears.
You don't love me? Whatever. Deal with it.
Don't let them see you cry.
All right. We're going to talk about how this album was received and how it holds up for us after this. So heading into this album, the expectations were pretty high for Death Cab, even though they'd only really had Movie Script Ending as the big single. They had some good buzz. The band was actually a little shocked that they met those expectations and that it was so well received. Gibbard in this era, just, we talked about it with Postal Service too. He just seemed like unaware of how good he was, I think. And maybe it was because he was doing things like writing 30 songs for a 10 song album and doing two projects at once, and there wasn't time to think about it. But he really, you read interviews and stuff at the time, he does not seem to have had a good idea of how good of a role he was on there.
Well, I feel like if you're just throwing, like I said, you're writing 30 songs for two relatively short albums, and then it's just like, oh, okay, I guess people like it.
Helping matters was the fact that, and we're going to talk about this a lot more in detail next week, but them licensing songs to the OC before release had a big benefit in terms of who they were reaching. The momentum of the Postal Service at the same time was big. Everything was kind of pulling in Death Cab's direction. The album did leak, but Gibbard had a good perspective on it. He told IGN, "I think it's a good thing. If anything, I like the idea of normal people getting a chance to hear it before it comes out. And if the general consensus is that it's a good record, that just means people will get more excited about it on the day it comes out." Which is fine. He did take some shots at music journalists leaking it. I guess the promos got leaked on eBay.
Oh,
so some music journal was like, "Oh, I'll make money by leaking the Death Cab album for like $5."
It's a very 2003 sentence.
Yeah. There was also, because Chris Walla is a little eccentric with his producing and his ideas about music, this album was also released on SA CDs because Walla thought it made the music more compelling to listen to. I guess it's a little higher fidelity. I've never listened to an SA CD.
I feel like it's like watching a movie in like 70mm. Like it's something probably like doesn't make that much of a difference.
Yeah, but Chris Walla can
to people who care about that, it makes a difference.
It also means that Transatlanticism it exists in this weird time where it was released on CD, vinyl, cassette, iTunes, and SA CD. So it's like, it's almost like the exact medium ground of as we transition from the CD era to the streaming era, and as vinyl is starting to, like, I guess it was like a little while after that before vinyl started to make its kind of comeback, but it was also released on vinyl. It's just, it's very odd to see iTunes, vinyl, CD, and cassette all
That's wild.
All this one medium. The album debuted at 97 on the Billboard 200. It was eventually certified gold in 2008. It wasn't one of these monstrous sales albums, possibly because it got leaked, possibly because it was at the start of the streaming era, but it was extremely well received. Uncut, Alt Press, and Andy Greenwald of Spin and AllMusic all gave it a very nice and very well written reviews. You will not be shocked to learn that Pitchfork did not like it as much and did not have as well written a review of it. But
they did a updated one.
Yes.
Like,
Ian Cohen.
No.
Ian Cohen in 2013 re-reviewed it on the anniversary. Oh, okay. And that was a great review. NPR had it in their top 50 most important albums of the decade. Rolling Stone had it at number 357 in terms of its best albums of the decade. Walla told Alt Press, "I was totally surprised and I continue to be surprised, kindly and amazingly and happily surprised at how well it was received. We hope it would do well, but we didn't think we were making a pivotal record. We were making the best record we could make, which is something I can thankfully say we've always done. I think the world needs different records at different moments for different reasons." This album fits the snapshot of that early mid-2000s indie emo boom pretty well. I mean, the OC just kind of highlights that, but he's pretty accurate that this album came along at exactly the right time.
I always find Death Cab and this album of Death Cab specifically interesting in the emo conversation, in the sense that, like, I know obviously they are a pivotal emo band, but they're, when I think of emo, they're never the first band that comes to mind. Like, they always scanned more like indie alternative to me, even though you listen to it, it's like, oh no, this is super an emo.
Also, gateway emo, right?
Yeah,
like,
true.
Like, they're one of the emo bands that sounds most like typical emo that actually got radio and TV show play.
True.
And was probably an introduction to the more traditional emo stuff, and especially like the Midwest emo wave that would come for a lot of people, I would think.
Yeah, I think that's
speak
fair.
For everyone. After this album comes out, Jimmy Iovine of Interscope tries to sign Death Cab and Postal Service as like a package deal. Gibbard was hoping to stretch his audience and reach more people, wasn't really all that concerned about like sticking to whatever people wanted from them. They eventually went with Atlantic, and they have released 5 more albums since, for a total of 9 albums. I mean, people will debate these rankings and we'll talk about them quickly, but another song that was prominent in the OC in later seasons was Soul Meets Body, which came off the album Plans.
I want to live where soul. Sun wrap its arms around
thought that sounded like an REM song.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? You're right.
Also big How I Met Your Mother song.
Yeah. I feel like that was a big hit too, wasn't it? Like
yeah, I
that,
think so.
That and Fall You Into the Dark off Plans, I feel like were.
Yes, Fall You Into the Dark is awesome. All told, the OC had 6 different instances of Death Cab playing, including 3 in the episode where they performed at the bait shop. Guys, what do we think in terms of favorite songs off Transatlanticism?
I guess I kind of already told you. I think the best song, my favorite song is Transatlanticism. But then it's like We Look Like Giants and probably Passenger Seat. No, Title and Registration.
Yeah, I have Title and Registration.
Self-titled, Title and Registration, and We Look Like Giants.
Yeah, I would flip We Look Like Giants and Transatlanticism as the 1-2, but I also have Title and Registration 3.
I think those are definitely my 1-2. I think New Year is probably 3
slaps,
for me.
Honestly, yeah.
Us and a good album opener.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I also feel like I didn't expect us all to agree on the top 2 songs record, but now that we've sort of talked about it, like they are kind of the 2.
I'm being completely honest, were it not for growing up in terms of lyrical content, Tiny Vessels would have probably pushed its way into the top 2.
It's a great song. Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah.
And then I'll always have a soft spot for Sound of Settling just because as the intro to them, and it's a song that I associate with one of my best friends.
Yeah, which is, I get that.
Which is, I know you're not supposed to associate Death Cab with friends. It's supposed to be only
relationships.
Only girls who don't. Only girls who don't like you back. Yeah.
Fellas. Fellas, is it gay to have nostalgic memories about music and pertaining to male friendships that you had?
Fellas, is it gay to watch How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days while you're super high after listening to Death Cab?
Real specific, but yeah.
Oh boy,
that's a good. That's quite a day.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if it happened in the same day, but.
It's all
definitely
blended.
I definitely brought up Death Cab and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days when I did his best man speech.
Perfect.
Yeah, both of those things definitely came up, so you know,
that's great,
fellas. All right, so the bigger question here, and I guess this doesn't really apply to Lauren because as you mentioned, it's kind of Death Cab's or Ben Gibbard rather is a transatlanticism and give up person for you. Jake, I know you have a hotter take on whether any other Death Cab album touches transatlanticism.
So I don't like saying, as we've discussed, I don't like saying the best because obviously this is all like subjective to everybody, but I think that the best Death Cab album is Narrow Stairs.
Wow.
Which I know nobody agrees with me on. But I think it's their most, as I alluded to earlier, I prefer rock Death Cab and it definitely has their heaviest rock songs, I would say, like the ending of Bixby Canyon Bridge, Long Division, Pity and Fear. Like they're just loud. I'm pretty sure it's Ben Gibbard's divorce album and it's definitely sounds like it's Ben Gibbard's divorce
you
album.
Would like the divorce album,
right?
Like, that's your whole vibe.
I like this. My vibe is Dashboard and yours is divorced Ben Gibbard.
I feel like any band that has like a divorce album, like that's your,
I don't know if that's true, but it sounds right.
Yeah,
it feels right.
I don't know which one of us gets it worse here. Me for having Chris Caraba energy or you for having divorce guy energy.
Divorce Ben Gibbard energy from Zoe Deschanel.
To take us back to the OC Property for a Brothers. Hot second.
Yeah.
I do think that Seth Cohen has like divorce guy energy.
Oh.
Seth Cohen definitely like got divorced.
Yeah. Oh, several times.
You mentioned Seth Cohen's divorce guy energy. The Seth Cohen starter pack included Death Cab for Cutie, Bright Eyes and the Shins. He also, throughout the show, has references to the Ramones, the Sex Pistols, Nirvana, Ben Folds, and NoFX on his wall or on stickers and things like that. My question for you guys, based on the timing of the show and what grades they're in, Seth Cohen is now 31 years old. What is he listening to?
All of the Boy Genius Women.
No, see, I was like, he fucks heavy with The National.
National for sure. He's sitting at home, like on the weekends he doesn't have his kids, drinking white wine and listening to The National.
See, I think that his distaste for apparently women making music, he carries into, like, I bet he kind of likes Rilo Kiley, but like hates Jenny Lewis solo stuff.
Okay. I also wonder if, like, just based on the music taste and the time, if he just has like me and Blake's taste in music.
Yeah, I mean, like,
he's super stoked that Bright Eyes are coming back.
Yeah, yeah.
I did lean toward male heavy options here, and it wasn't with the same line of thinking, but I did have trouble picturing him. I was also really worried because, like, my tastes have gone very female front heavy.
Yeah.
And I was just worried about projecting my own tastes onto Seth Cohen.
That's fair. I think The National's a perfect.
The National's a good one. I also think he really likes The World's a Beautiful Place and I'm No Longer Afraid to
Die. Yeah.
I think he's into like that kind of, that's the kind of emo that he's gone at. Like he's ditched the punkier stuff, but the more artsy.
The post-rocky. Like,
yeah. Yes.
He got into that fucking super depressing Mount Eerie album.
Yeah. I could see him fucking with like Fleet Foxes too.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Oh, Fleet Foxes.
Father John Misty is absolutely a Seth Cohen artist.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Fucking like the Mountain Goats.
Yeah.
But only some
Mountain
Goats.
Only some Mountain Goats. Yeah.
Only the Divorce.
Yeah. Albums. Right.
He really likes.
He doesn't like Beat the Champ, and he's really mad that they did a wrestling themed album.
He was stoked they used to do Dungeons and Dragons one though.
Yes.
He probably
does. He ever do Dungeons and Dragons on the OC?
I don't think so.
Because I feel like
he definitely has it. He like is a grown man who played. Not that there's anything wrong with this. I know I've played Dungeons and Dragons.
I played D&D a few months ago.
Yeah, my sister plays it. No one's ever invited me to. All my like dude friends in high school that played it were like, "No women allowed. If you come, you can like." Make us pizza. And I was like, you're dumb and this game is dumb. And then no one ever invited me to play it. So if you have you
really know, bucking the stereotype of Dungeons and Dragons players there.
See, I thought it would. Yeah, I'm not going to get in. I don't want to shame anyone, nerd shame anyone for Dungeons and Dragons. But that is the opposite of what I thought the reaction would have been to a girl wanting to play Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, they were not. And then but I just feel like I'd be good at it.
It's, I can see that.
Yeah, I can see it. It's just like making shit up. It's really
fun. Hell yeah.
I've never played it, so I don't really know how it works. Once, but I was like, I'm hooked. I like the idea of like literally you can do anything.
Yeah.
And it just like, and also it's all probabilities. Just,
oh, buddy, it's all stats. You'd love it.
Yeah. I'd be a good, what's it called? Game Master?
The Dungeon Master. Yeah.
I feel like I could do that. Well, I guess I would have to learn it a lot better, but
yeah.
You're just like telling a story based off probabilities. Let's go.
That's what you do. Anyway.
Yeah, I love to commit to a character bit. I'd be like the Australian bard and I would always talk in an Aussie accent, mate, and then I'd never stop singing. And every song would be like really fun in like an Australian fun folk song, you know?
I'm furious you haven't done the whole podcast in that voice.
We're going to bring you back on for like Camp Cope or something. And we're just going to get you to, we'll get you to play a character the whole time and see how long that you can stay.
I could fill an episode of my high school love of random Australian bands, which is a real thing. That
Do you know what? Also, somehow not surprised.
You want to talk about Body Jar and The Living End? Let's go.
All right. We need to let Lauren go and
escape this nightmare.
Also like to nail down this character for the next time she comes back on under a different name.
Yeah.
We might.
All right. The thing we have to do before we go, I think we're probably going to be down to two options here. Lauren, every episode we pick a song from the album to be on the mixtape, the Living Mixtape. So I think probably given our rankings, this comes down to Transatlanticism where we look like giants.
Yep.
What do you think, Lauren?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's like a real Sophie's Choice type of situation, you know?
Only one makes the tape, though.
I'm good with either. I think maybe like... I mean, I think Transatlanticism because it's my favorite song, but I also think maybe depending on the vibe of the mixtape, We Look Like Giants might be a better fit in the general vibe.
The mixtape's been all over the place.
Yeah.
Okay. Title track it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not title track. That's a different Death Cab song. That's Revenge for All the Pixies and the Pixies shit.
Oh my God, I hate you. Lauren, do you want to come back permanently?
Yeah.
Guys, you can follow Lauren at Internet Lauren. Again, her podcast is Cavern of Secrets. Thanks, Lauren.
Yeah.
This is great. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Another perfect episode.
Yeah, another perfect episode. Another perfect. And then, you know, that this episode was like the friends we made along the way, you know?
Yeah.
Aww.
The lesson here, friendship.
Friendship. Friendship and, you know, and fellas.
Yeah.
Fellas.
Fellas, is it gay to have friends?
Yeah. I don't know. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Lauren, thank you. Jake, whatever.
Yeah.
Please try the fish.